We have in the studio right now with us Annelise Hagen from the Living Oceans Foundation. Hi, Annelise. Thanks so much for coming along today.
Hi, Helen. Hi, Kat. Nice to be here.
Now, first off, I guess we'll just have... We've all surely seen pictures of colourful coral reefs in magazines and TV, but perhaps we could start off by just explaining what are coral reefs made of? What are they? Are they living? Are they dead? What are the animals that actually live on a reef?
Well, yes, as you say, Helen, most people will have seen, if they haven't seen coral reefs firsthand by snorkelling or scuba diving, they'll have seen them on television and in newspapers. Coral reefs are a sort of hot topic at the moment. Coral reefs are actually comprised of tiny animals called coral polyps, which lay down a calcium carbonate limestone skeleton. And it's this skeleton that over hundreds of thousands of years forms a very large reef structure. And within those coral animals, they actually have a symbiotic relationship with a microscopic algae called zooxanthellae. And these enable the corals to lay down the calcium carbonate skeleton. And so they're a very important part of the coral reef ecosystem.
And so we see these beautiful pictures, and some of us are lucky enough to visit them as well when we're diving and so on. And there's obviously like a heap of other animals as well that live on coral reefs. And I mean, they are one of the most diverse ecosystems in the world, aren't they? They're kind of on par with rainforests.
Yes, they're often described as the rainforest of the sea. They host numerous coral species, fish species, invertebrates, all sorts really. But not only are they very important for their biodiversity, hundreds of people around the world actually depend on coral reefs for financial gain through tourism, through fisheries, and the structures that they form are an important coastal protection barrier against wave impact. And due to the location of coral reefs in the tropics, often these surround low-lying areas. So these are a very important barrier against wave erosion.
Because actually, you part of your job working with the Living Oceans Foundation there is you went out to Aceh, didn't you, to look at the effect after the tsunami that was happening in the coral reef areas?
Yes, that's correct. We actually went out 10 months after the tsunami hit, and we were on a boat. We went up the west coast of Sumatra and surveyed on the offshore islands. And there we didn't find actually a huge amount of damage, and we were actually quite surprised. Over half the reefs we surveyed, there was no tsunami damage at all. And that's actually the same as studies from Thailand. So we were actually quite surprised that the waves sort of passed over the coral reef itself and did have a very bad impact on land. But actually, the reefs are very resilient to such powerful wave energy.
And so I guess in a way, it's what we found after the tsunami happened was it wasn't so much that the tsunami was having damage on the reefs like you found, but more where we have damaged the reefs ourselves by removing coral for buildings, for damaging fish techniques, because people often use dynamite, don't they, for
yes,
fishing.
Absolutely. That's also another point is where they've cleared mangroves for coastal development. I mean, mangroves are very important for coastal protection. So where the reef has been actually mined for the limestone for building material, and also the mangrove has been cleared as they've developed the coastline, that's where the worst tsunami impact was.
Yeah, and I was going to say, we have some crazy fact, don't we, about the number of people who live quite close to coral reefs. It's something like, is it 8% of
it's
the world?
It's about 8% of the world's population.
Live within 100 kilometres of a coral
reef. A huge number of people living very, very close to a coral reef. And they actually, I mean, most of them, their livelihoods are driven from the coral reef themselves. So the pressure that's being put on coral reefs at the moment is incredibly high.
So we see, sorry, Kat, you go over.
I was just going to say, I mean, you're talking about coral reefs in the tropics. Do you find corals anywhere else around the world?
There are corals, yes. I mean, you can actually find corals around the UK, for example, but they do not form large reef-like structures. I mean, we're talking about specifically tropical coral reefs, and these are actually the ones that have the symbiotic zooxanthellae, which they're called hermatypic corals. And they're the ones that lay down the calcium carbonate skeleton and build this huge, huge structure.
So they're less important around islands like ours, the corals that we have, because they're just there. So are they little blobs?
Well, I could argue with some friends who work in the UK on reef protection in the UK. I wouldn't say they're less important, but certainly, I mean, I don't think that we depend on them so strongly as a lot of people who in the tropics don't necessarily have any other alternatives to depend on.
And there's always the deep sea corals, which, like Annalise said, don't have those zooxanthellae in their tissues, and they live very deep down in the dark parts of the ocean. And we've already touched a little bit on the problems that the effects that we're having on the reefs around the world. What particular, if there was, you know, three or four things that are really the main problems for reefs that we're posing to them, what do you think those might be?
Well, the biggest problem we've seen in recent years actually is a natural phenomenon. I mean, it's the El Nino ocean warming that happened in 97-98, and this had a very, very severe impact on the corals. And why this happens is because the water temperature increased and the corals essentially become stressed. And when they become stressed, they spit out their zooxanthellae, these microscopic algae, or the microscopic algae are actually degraded in situ within the coral tissue. And without these zooxanthellae, the corals can't actually live. And this is called coral bleaching.
And it's called that because they turn completely white, don't they?
Well, it's not the corals that actually turn white. It's the zooxanthellae that give them their colour. So if the zooxanthellae are not there, the coral tissue is actually translucent, transparent. And the white that you're seeing is the coral skeleton itself. So an increase in water temperature causes this bleaching phenomenon. And this was very prevalent in 1998, especially in the Western Indian Ocean, where over 90% of some corals were bleached in the Seychelles and the Maldives especially.
And so the corals can't, we say they can't feed if they don't have these zooxanthellae. And do they definitely die or can they actually recover?
They can recover, yes. If the stress is not prolonged, then the corals can actually regain their zooxanthellae and they will regain their colour and they can go on living. It might be that their health is slightly degraded for a short term, but if the stress is prolonged, say if the temperature stays very high for a few months, then the corals don't ever regain their zooxanthellae and they actually die.
Stripping down science.
Okay, let's do it.
The Naked Scientists.